Randall.
Good evening.
Good evening.
You're the first to arrive.
Okay. Malka.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Hey, Malka.
Hey, Randy. How are you doing?
Hot.
Yeah. That's the truth.
Well, you can always come to Atlanta.
Is it cool?
Oh, it was 72 today.
Oh, I'm moving. I'm moving. It was 90. It was 90 with no air. It's hot.
It was cool here because Tony went walking because it was cool. So it wasn't 90, but I think tomorrow the index is supposed to be over 100.
Oh, wow.
Well, it's supposed to warm up here, so. That's what happens when you get hot over there and cool in the Louisiana.
You know, I've come to think that God gives us the hot weather in the summer so that we can practice to get ready to go to Gehenna.
The only problem with that, Randy, is you don't need the practice.
Yeah, I figure I'm already there.
I think we'll get started. We're in.
Is it gonna be a that's okay. I was going to ask if it was going to be devil's advocate again today.
Hannah, didn't you say you wanted to add something before we started?
Well, that was yesterday. You passed it up, so I'll let it go.
Well,
because when the class was over, I felt like we lived this lesson. As I thought about the characters and the way you questioned us was kind of like Rabbi. Yeah. And then last night, I know I was sleepy, but I didn't understand the class last night. I felt like, oh my goodness, didn't deserve it. Wasn't on the level to receive it. I'm living the class.
Well,
so, and I was out of
last night's
my
class
suspicion.
Is a difficult class.
I'm sorry, what?
Last night's class is a class. But go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I don't know why, but it's breaking up. You know, I catch a word or two.
Understand.
Okay. But go ahead and say the L'shem L'kud, and then I'll tell you the little story, and then if you want to go on with the class, you can.
L'shem L'kud, Shabri Fuish, Kimke, Bithiluur, Himu, Tilu, Tiluur, Himu. Leachta L'shem Yudhe Bavate, Beyehuda, Shalim B'shem Kol Yisrael, Limud Torah Mitzvah, La Sok Torah Mitzvah. Vayehino amadunai Eloheinu aleinu maasei yadeinu penunei aleinu maasei yadeinu penuneihu. Go ahead.
Okay, well, on Thursday I had to miss the class because I had unexpected company, but I did get to listen to the recording. And it's one of my favorites because of what I was always taught was, or read, was that Hashem gave the Hayes from his name to Abraham and Sarai, you know, And that the principle of that we have in Kabbalah, that there's no disappearance in spirituality, then what happened to the Yod of Sarai? And way back, I found my handout that I had given my class, or that I had used to give them the information. It was the June 22nd of 2005, and it was from Arut Sheva, which was the Israeli national news that I would get every day. And the story was called The Crying Yod. And it goes like this. I'll read part and I'll just tell you. Rabbi Zalman Sorotskin and Az Naim LaTorah discusses the changing of the spelling of Joshua, although in Hebrew it's Hoshea, and we usually pronounce it in English as Hosea. His name was changed to Yehoshua. Let's see, Yehoshea, yeah. The Jerusalem Talmud says that the letter Yud, taken from the name of the foremother, Sarai, when her name was changed to Sarah, stood up in protest and screamed for 400 years. The protest continued until Joshua, came, and the Almighty prophetically had Moses add the Yud to Hosea's name, Joshua's name. The connection between Sarah and Joshua is that Hashem told Sarah that her child would inherit Eretz Yisrael, and she had confronted Avraham Avinu, our father, with the fiery declaration. This is what she said: "For that son of a maidservant," meaning Yishmael, "will not inherit this land with my son, with Isaac, with Yitzhak." And that's Bereishit 21, verse 10. And now Joshua, Sarah's descendant, was the one to return the Jewish nation to Eretz Yisrael and conquer it. So it was fitting for him to receive that Yod. So I just thought it was a neat little midrash. And I know you've told me that there are several midrashim explaining their names. But I always knew that the two hays that were added to their name change their DNA, because then they were able to actually change more than just their DNA, I guess you'd say, because then they were able to have a child, you know. So a lot happens in the physical as well as the spiritual when we get our new names.
That is correct. There's a I'm trying to remember the Hebrew word, but it's escaping me right now. In the Talmud, it says that Avram and Sarai were infertile. They both lacked the organs capable of creating children for reproduction, yes. Sarah lacked a womb, and Abraham lacked testes. And that when they added the hay to both names, the hay represents the vessels. Both the vessels of Malchut and the vessel of Bina. So it was by adding the hay, you are able to change the destiny, the DNA, however way you want to perceive it. And that's exactly what happened.
Okay. You think that it was who got the upper hay and who got the lower hay? My first thought was Abraham got the upper hay, but then it made me, you know, that's Bina and associated with the feminine side. So I just didn't, you know, this is something to ponder anyway.
Well, it's a good question. but the female is Malchut. And the and Bina is also a vessel, but it's in total unity with Chachma at all times. So so the answer to your question would be that Sarah received the lower hay, and Avram the upper hay, which is what elevated him within his DNA change up to Chesed, because up till that point he was not at the level of Chesed. He was learning, he was in the process, but he hadn't finalized it. And we've spoken a few times that the final action was the binding of Isaac, because both men, Isaac was 37 years old and Abraham was 137. At that moment, they both went against their nature. Abraham, being the chariot for Chesed, had to effectively kill his son, and Isaac, being the chariot for Giborah, judgment and strength, had to agree to be bound rather than defend himself from the binding, which is what the left column with Giborah would do. So they both went against their nature at that moment, and that was the purpose of their existence. And it was after that that Isaac is able to have children with Rivka. So there's a lot of information that we kind of have to kind of absorb to understand how the forefathers relate to each one of us individually.
Mm-hmm.
So let us continue our class, or begin our class, whatever it is. We're in Parasha Lech Lecha from the Sulam commentary, section 28, and we're at Pasuk 299. Wehake shimana I barnash chata behema machatat tekud shabrifu amar adam ki yakriv mihem karban wigomer amai elatud shabrifu aved ruach bene nascha ruach habehema v'yafresh da min da ugin kach ruach v'nei hadam haola iyo lemala v'ruach habehema v'gomer v'day mit perash da min da. And the translation, and I heard thus, if a man sinned, what is the sin of the animal? That the Holy One, blessed be He, said, if any man of you bring an offering to Hashem of the cattle, and he replies, the Holy One, blessed be He, formed the spirit of men and the spirit of animals, and then separated them from each other. Therefore, the spirit of man goes upwards, and the spirit of the beast goes downwards. So they are definitely separated from each other. My commentary. Ask the question, is the word cattle referring to the human body or to an actual cow? Also, what is the meaning of up and down in this context, especially animal souls going downwards? questions, comments, thoughts?
I was trying to remember the Hebrew word for cattle. Is it behemo?
Behemo is an animal. The Hebrew word for cattle is par, but in this verse, the Aramaic is using the word behema. And behema means an animal. It doesn't even have to be a kosher animal.
Oh. Well, I always think of cattle, not just of cows. You know, I think of cows and sheep. I kind of group all those animals that were for sacrifices, goats and the bull and the sheep, the lambs.
I just made a mistake. The word for animal is chaya, meaning a living thing. And behema is a word for a domesticated animal.
Okay.
So it doesn't have to be kosher, but it needs to be domesticated.
Okay.
But in the Torah,
and the spirit of man goes upwards. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I thought you were finished. Excuse me.
Well, in the Torah, the word that's being discussed, or the word says specifically a cow being brought as the offering. And the question is, what is, if you bring a cattle, what is the sin that you're bringing it for? What's the purpose of that? And that's the question that's being asked in the verse itself.
Well, that depended on the person's consciousness, because when we studied all the princes and the of the tribes that brought their sacrifices, their offerings on the dedication of the temple, they all brought the same thing, but each one had a different consciousness, and it covered for a different transgression. So
that's correct, and it is consciousness that prevails and establishes the purpose of the offering.
Mm-hmm. Because I know even the barley, you know, we just finished with the barley harvest, and the idea that the barley was poor man's grain to make bread. It was also animal food, but it was also the offering that was brought for sexual sins. So it wouldn't matter if it was food or if it was animal. It would still depend on the person's consciousness and their transgression. And when it says spirit of man goes upwards, I always think of us always like Lamed. You know, Lamed reaches above the line, and it also reaches below the line. And to me, I see us as always climbing the tree of life, you know, trying to reach the highest level. And Hashem responding but coming down toward us. And I don't know, with the beast, the animals going down, I always think, well, another reincarnation, and then if they went from animal to then to the talking human, it would be like they're going down, but they're really going up too, to another level, another dimension.
First off, the Lamed goes above the line, but the body of the Lamed, the Kaf part of the Lamed, the circular part of the Lamed, does not go below the line. It's within the lines. So it's the kuf, the letter kuf, that goes below the line. So don't confuse that. That's number one. But numbers what the verse is saying, this is a hint to the physical law of equal and opposite reactions. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. That's a physical law. So if you push against something and you push it away from you, you move backwards. And in this case, you bring the animal, as it dies, it is going downwards. The soul of the animal is going downwards, and that energy of release of the soul is energy that pushes the human soul upwards. Equal and opposite reactions. Now, bringing in reincarnation into the discussion, we've talked about during at the moment that the vessels broke in the world of dots, in the world of Nikudim, when the vessels broke, the light fell into the klipa, it fell down. And the higher the spark, the lower it fell into the klipa. And the animals are on a higher level, but not in this lifetime, not in this situation. The animals, when they go down, they go back into the klipa. The sacrifice of the animals is earning the animal merit to be part of the next 7,000-year cycle. That's my opinion. It's not something that I've read per se. But I'm just putting all these different things that we have learned, different aspects that we have learned, all together in order to understand what this verse is teaching us. And you see how the Zohar brings a verse from Kohelet that's really out of left field. It really doesn't have anything specifically, because it's coming from Kohelet. And if you study Kohelet, a lot of times the verses don't make sense relative to one to the next. They're not talking about the same subject. And that's what the Zohar brings quite frequently. It brings verses from different prophets and different writings, and it explains those verses in the context of what it's talking about. So everybody is now quiet again.
Well, I'm wondering, how does that animal get out of the klipot? I'm disappointed to learn that, because I thought it meant, you know, the poor animal would, because it lost its life for a human, that it would then have a chance to reincarnate as a human. So how is it going to get out of the klipot?
In order for it to be the spirit for the animal, the klipot had to authorize that spirit to allow it to reincarnate. And the process that we've studied in the every soul that fell into the klipot has to earn merit through one action or another. Well, part of it is cleansing itself by being in the klipot, but other parts of it we learn is that human beings, by bringing the animal and the animal accepting its role of being the sacrifice, the animal earns merit so that it can reincarnate back into another animal or be elevated to the level of of a human being. Remember, we have this idea that every living thing will find its way to become a child of Israel. But it's not necessarily, you know, a fast process. As one of the verses that we read a few weeks ago is that it can take 2,000 lifetimes in order to elevate out of the klipot, to complete the tikkun. Now, that's referring to a human being. But it can be some of those 2,000 might be while they were animals. Because I forget which Rebbe in the Hasidic movement, it wasn't any of the Chabad Rebbe's, but it was one of them, who described that during the lifetime of Jacob, he was one of the lambs that was owned by Laban that Jacob was working with, and so he was reincarnated into a lamb. That was his second lifetime. It describes who he was in the time of the flood. He was a human being, but he had to reincarnate as a lamb, and that was in Jacob's lifetime. And then it says that he became a particular personage from the Talmud. It was his third lifetime. So that's where that teaching is coming from, Tana.
Mm-hmm. Well, a few weeks back, one of our classes gave the months that the reincarnation takes place for each species, like the vegetables in certain months and the animals in certain months, and that really impressed me. And I made a card on it, and I guess I did have a question because it made me wonder, when we say the Kaddish for the Martyr's Kaddish, that I think it elevates the soul that is passed on as well as helps the person who's the mourner. And so it made me wonder if during the special month for certain species, if prayer helped them get out of the klipot.
Yes. The prayer will help. If you pray for an animal, it will help elevate the animal. It's not recommended to do so because the animal, by virtue of its being an animal, is very strongly connected to its animal instincts and its animal emotions. And so when you are praying for the animal, you are helping it to elevate, but at the same time you are connecting to that raw naked energy of emotion that we are trying to learn to control. So it's basically saying in this life cycle of the 7,000 years, it's not a recommended thing to do.
Okay.
We are out of time.
Good.
So we will pick this up tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you.
And tonight we have a Zohar class, a Tikkuni Zohar class.
Okay.
Shalom.
Shalom.